Preston and Steve Fun Size Podcast.
Our next guest is back in our studio and is back in town and has a new book out. And you know him from American Ninja Warrior, maybe his years in the NFL or both possibly. Please welcome Akbar Bajabiamila to
the I'm so happy to be back here in Philadelphia. The good thing is I didn't embarrass myself this time around.
That's what I heard. Yeah. So to recap, last time, I think it was the last time you were in town. You got
actually, this is the day last year.
Okay.
Are you kidding?
Yeah. You're at the Phil's game. The yeah, you throw out the first pitch and you had a rough one.
Yeah, I had a rough one. Yep. Only a couple of people saw it, though, which is good. why are you guys playing this thing? Why?
Just to reminisce a little bit.
I mean, can we get a replay on it? Because I think the best part of this that people forget in this whole thing is they didn't look at my leg. I mean, look at the leg go up. I mean, you could see the leg go up, and there was a nice kick.
Oh, yep.
And Dennis Eckersley actually called me and said, like, that was a really good, like, Eckersley impression.
Well, okay. Everything was there in presentation.
Yes.
Execution is where it fell down.
Yeah, it did. Look, I'm not a pitcher, okay? All right, give me a break. Like, I was a defensive lineman, okay?
Yeah. It looks like you were trying to really throw it, fire it
okay,
in there.
Okay, so here's the truth. The night before, I saw President Barack Obama.
Yeah.
I saw President George W. Bush throw out a first pitch. And I just thought to myself, man, they look like old men throwing it, just cut
just
it,
lobbing it.
Just lobbing it.
Yeah.
I was like, no, that's not me. I have a little bit more pride. I'm a former professional athlete, and inside there's still that thing like I want people to see me that way, like I can still do some things. Yeah. You know what I mean?
He's got the gift.
And so I come up in there and I'm like, I'm about to surprise them. They don't know what's about to come in there. I'm about to bring a little heat. And the heat came on me in a different way. It went from, and look, this was my very first time ever throwing a pitch and having a first pitch. So I felt honored. It was crazy how Philly, like, I said, man, they showing me some love. I'm a West Coast boy. I just felt honored. I almost became a Philly fan right there and then.
Yeah.
I was like, Dodgers, almost. You're out. I was like, and then as soon as I threw that bad pitch,
let you have it.
And you felt it. I was like, oh my gosh, get me out of here.
Yeah. It's a good thing you hadn't bought your Phillies jersey just yet.
It's weird because those boos, it's kind of like a cheer.
Yeah.
In that particular situation, it's kind of like the Run DMC. It's not bad meaning bad, but bad meaning good. They're not boos meaning boos, but boos meaning yeah.
Oh, boy. Okay.
What are you talking about?
He's trying to make me feel better. He's trying to convert me.
What you should have tried, see if you guys can find the video of the guy from Cirque du Soleil who threw out the first pitch one time. That's how you throw out a first pitch.
Okay, hold on. First off, so yesterday I was supposed to come back and redeem myself.
Yes.
And that died hard because, you see what I did there?
Yeah, you did,
because Bruce Willis bumped me, which was an honor to meet him. I was like, shoot, I mean, I grew up watching it the whole night, so it was cool. But can we pull up his first pitch? I think mine was better than his.
Wait, hold on a second. Back this up. I want you to see the Cirque du Soleil guy.
Okay.
Wait, it's yeah, here we go.
What?
He does a
wow.
And he put it across the plate, too.
Did he?
Yeah, he did a crazy backflip twist. We'll show you, and watch this.
Right. Boom. What you don't know is that dude's really an American Ninja Warrior.
All right, now pull up Bruce Willis's pitch from last night, and we'll do our best to describe these to those who have not seen it yet. But so you should, at what point did they tell you, by the way, Akbar?
Well, so by the time I got to the park, they said, hey, thank you so much for coming out, but here's the deal. Bruce Willis is here. I said, oh, shoot, is he?
Yeah.
Look, I was actually
he's
happy.
Watch
Bruce
me.
Willis, yeah. I owe him a lot because I hadn't practiced one bit since.
What?
I hadn't practiced one bit. Oh, I didn't practice. And I didn't know if it was going to be the, he's got the walk. He's got the cool walk and everything.
Yeah, he's strolling out. See, everything about him oozes cool. That's okay. For sure. And he's not even at the pitcher's mound. He's part of it, which is what they do anyway. So he lobs it and
but that was kind of an old man throw.
It was.
It was an old man throw.
But it was accurate. The bounce was the catch.
It went low, just like mine.
Just to call it the way it is, yours was a outside, as they say, almost outside the park. But it was
yours
made it about 5 yards.
I was far away. That one looked far worse from where I was.
So
when
did they have you stand in front of the mound as they did with him?
No, they had me on the mound.
Okay.
Even though I was supposed to, and I saw how far it was because I had never been on a mound in real life. And I was like, oh, hell no, I can't make it. So I cheated it and made it my way down to the bottom. Uh-huh. And, but yeah.
still didn't work out for you.
All right,
no, it didn't.
So did they say that they'll have you back again sometime?
I think they may. Yeah, I think they may.
All right.
But the next time we film Ninja Warrior down here in Philadelphia.
Did you hang with Willis?
Yeah, I did. I got a chance to meet him. Cool. Talked a little bit, and
he's
that was cool.
Sports,
yeah, but and he told me he played baseball growing up. So yeah, so it was expected of him.
Did he say anything about ever watching American Ninja Warrior?
No, I didn't want to pin him up like that. You know what I mean? Right. I didn't want to pin him up. I was just like, man, it was cool to meet you. Yeah. So yeah, I took a picture, put it on the gram. You know, that's what you got to do. Put it on the gram.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, we're going to talk about your book as well, because that is out, and that's one of the things that you're in town promoting. It's called Everyone Can Be a Ninja.
Yeah.
And what all is this about? What's the basic theme of the book?
Well, not that you guys have a shot at becoming ninja warriors. No. Not that I'm dissing you guys. But, no, the show has really inspired me to really kind of look within. For the last 7 years, I've seen these ninjas compete on the show, and they overcome the obstacles on the course. And I just thought, you know, what about the obstacles we have in our own personal lives? And it inspired me to want to inspire others by telling my personal story about the obstacles I had to overcome, not only to get in the NFL, to play in the NFL, but even making it to American Ninja Warrior. I was the least likely candidate to be hosting American Ninja Warrior on a primetime show. I didn't have a big NFL career. My brother played in the NFL almost 10 years, Packers Hall of Famer, and I didn't have that career. And when you look at TV and the landscape of sports television and entertainment, a lot of times those spots are reserved for the big guys, the Hall of Famers, the Super Bowl winners, and I didn't have any of that. And so the journey there was quite challenging, but it was just me being resilient, me thinking outside of the box, humbling myself, understanding my passion, and then approaching it. And so I took a backdoor approach where I went to a local NBC station in San Diego and said, hey, look, I'll work for free and I'll do the postgame show for the Chargers and the San Diego State Aztecs. And they go, like, for free?
Yeah.
You're
saying all the stuff that that's honestly it. And we talk about it all the time, and we hope that it encourages people to do that. It also involves being fluid.
Yes.
Being able to adapt to different scenarios. And also being able, we talk about it, Preston, you've talked about it many times, sometimes being able to assess where you are in life. Okay, so I'm not going to be this.
Right.
And this doesn't appear, but I can take this and turn it around and maybe tilt it up and go this way.
Right.
And that's a possibility. So
yeah, it's understanding kind of where you are in that space.
Yeah.
You know, one of the chapters I talk about is rejecting your circumstances. And that applies in everything we do in life. And it is not a sports thing. You know, I grew up in South Central Los Angeles, and in the Crenshaw District, it's very easy for people to go, hey, like, these are the circumstances I grew up in.
Yep.
Woe is me. This happened. And I say reject that. Accept that, you know, you understand the platform that you have or where you've grown up, but then you don't have to necessarily be a victim of it.
I'm fascinated by the life of a professional athlete because you're really trained to do one thing and do it really well, and then you make it to the highest level that there is.
Yep.
As a professional athlete in your sport of choice was the NFL.
Mm.
And then you have to figure out what to do after that.
Yep.
And you have to figure that out at a young age where you've been mostly trained to do just one thing.
That's right, Nick.
And so I'm curious as to what your experience was in figuring out what to do afterwards.
Yep.
And what other athletes that you've talked to, you know, when they're in their mid or early 20s, they're no longer going to do this sport for a living, you know, to make a living, literally be a professional.
Nick, it is one of the most challenging things because here you are 20 for me. I was 28, 29 years old, and I'm retired.
Right.
So
that's a mind blower.
Yeah, and the depression that happens afterwards, it's the very first thing that happens. And it's the same thing that a person who's worked in an industry for 30-something years and they're in their 60s and they retire and they kind of go, what do I do with my life now? And you experiencing that at 30, 29, 28, and you have your whole life in front of you, I mean, it is just a tank. And then you go through this identity crisis. So you go from this depression, like, I'm not playing anymore, to this identity crisis, like, who am I? What am I? And you start going around, people are looking at the enormity of your size. Man, you should still be playing. And every time somebody says that to a former athlete, just know it gets them right in the gut because you're like, man, like, I should still be playing, but why aren't I playing? And everyone only identifies you as an athlete. And you're trying to reshape yourself, but people keep trying to put you in this athletic box. And you're like, what do I do? And then you have to be able to evaluate yourself. And the evaluation process is very hard because the hardest person to get to know is yourself, because there's denial, there are wounds, there are the things that you're familiar with. When you're doing sports for since from a kid all the way up to that age, it's hard. And so for me, I had to go and I had to stop myself and I had to say, what is it that you really want? I had to ask the hard question, why? And what is your purpose? Because I really do believe that purpose defeats fear. I talk about that in the book. And if you understand your purpose, yep, then it eliminates the fear of trying something new. Because we all do. We go try something new.
Yes.
And it's scary. Like, I don't want to. How do I? And I even go into the journey. We can even go deeper and deeper into it. Like, even from the financial standpoint, I went from, to accelerate the point, I went from $300,000 in my bank account to $40,000 within less than 2 years. It was almost 2 years. And I wasn't buying private jets, private, you know, fancy smancy cars. I drove an Oldsmobile Bravada at the time.
You were living. You know,
I was just living. Life was happening, but right, I didn't have any income coming in. And I had got married. I had two kids. And all of a sudden, I'm like, oh, my goodness. And I had to start making quick decisions and to understand, like, man, my little head start that I had was almost gone.
Right.
Real quick, people are texting in or just joining and liking what they're hearing and want to know who we're talking to. It's Akbar Bajabi Amila who is here. And Steve, you had a question?
Yeah, no, just to that point. So, a similar thing, and we've all had it at different levels. Preston started off going to be a rock star. I was a stand-up comedian for a long time. That was what my income was, doing that. And then it shifted. I was like, nah, this is... It's firing for me, but not really. And then shifted to radio, which was honestly when I was going to school was the least of the things that I was interested in. Suddenly became the thing, but I was starting over. And you talk about making that assessment and working for free and realizing, you know, what you have to do to get going. It's a daunting thing for a lot of people. But you said something that struck me is that you can't waste time just sitting there going, oh, woe is me, sort of go.
Right.
Make a swing at it and just start moving, because once you lose momentum, that's where you're going to fall prey to all those demons.
Steve, you're so right. It's the momentum that is really key, because there's this pressure of I got to do something, and that's a healthy momentum. Like, what am I doing next? What am I doing next? But if you sit there and you just come, oh, I don't have anything going to me. Nobody's coming to me. Nothing's happening. And there's this whole entitled mindset that you got to break down, because when you're in the league, people are always, like, giving you opportunities. They're just handing in, putting it on your lap, and people are always doing things for you. And then all of a sudden you go, oh, I got to be the creator. And I'll never forget having a conversation with a former teammate of mine who played in the NFL, and we were teammates at San Diego State. And I called him, and I called it the Magic Johnson syndrome.
Yeah.
Because Magic Johnson did a lot for athletes in showing that you can go from sports into being a businessman. But it was also, there's a curse to it, too. Because so many guys lost focus. They saw Magic Johnson with the theaters and Starbucks and part owner of the Lakers. And he was doing all these different things. And I got out of the league and I was like, I want to do broadcasting. I want to have a franchise, do franchising. And I want to do this. And I want to start a clothing line. And I want to do this. And I want to do all these things. And I remember my teammate, Andrew Klein, go, Akbar, hold on. I can't even keep up with all of your ideas right now. Mm-hmm. And I remember him saying, Akbar, you have to choose one. If you fail at it, get up, try it again. If you fail, try it again. And I'll never forget that, because I think what happens is you add all these different things and they're really built up excuses. Because if you shoot for five different things or six different things, you can say, well, you know, I was doing this and this, and you just lose focus.
Well, it also,
you lose focus.
You fall into, well, I got this guy. It's like the old thing about, you see it in portrayed in movies all the time with the guy, the producer, the hustler, well, I got this, and then there's a thing that I'm working on, and I just signed a deal with cable. I get it for $100.
I thought that was an L.A. thing.
Right, but you know what I'm saying? Yeah. So it's that vibe of getting distracted. I see so many people, and you give the advice. It's tough, man. It's tough at certain points, you know, and sometimes we'll get calls from people or emails from people who want to get into radio, and they're, you know, you have to be honest. If you're well along and you have to take a look at the landscape, if it's your dream and you want to pursue it, great.
Right.
But you also have to be able to assess where you are and what is the likeliest path that's going to yield you.
And I really do believe, Steve, that people can, like, if someone wants to, and it may seem far off, like it seemed like a wild dream for me to pursue this. Like, Akbar, you didn't have that football career. Come on, man. Like, you're going down the wrong path. And I was like, you're not going to stop me. In fact, I'm not going to do anything else. And it was at the detriment of putting my family in financial crisis. When I went down from $40,000, that money kept going. From $300,000 to $40,000, I got my first gig doing Division II games for CBS College Sports, making $26,000 a year. And for me, on the inside, I felt rich. Now, my wife and the kids was like, we got a problem. She was like, you asked me to stop working, and I was making more money than this. And in my mind, I just like, I'm doing what I love. I have a passion for it. You couldn't tell me anything. And then I had to look at the bank account. Hold on, let me look at this statement. And I look at it and say, ooh, Viva Loca. This isn't good. And no. Then I made a pivot. But still, I was focused is the point. I was focused on making sure that I wasn't going down four different paths to then somehow suffocate the idea that I was,
it never allows you to focus.
Right.
In your mind, you're convincing yourself you have momentum because
right.
Look at all these things that I'm working,
right.
But only maybe one of them is even remotely going to be give you a return, while
right.
The others are just distractions. I had the same situation with my wife. We got to the point where I'm like, I think this is where I want to go.
Right.
I think this is going to happen. And we basically had that uncomfortable conversation. Okay.
Ride with
this
me.
This is how much yeah. time I'm willing to go along with this.
Yeah.
And then we're going to have to really reassess. And thankfully it did work out. But you have to have those discussions with yourself. You know?
And we have this in all different parts of our lives where the book, I'm hoping that it will inspire people to be able to find that greatness. And you find that greatness by getting to know yourself better, understanding the things that you do well, the things that you don't do well, knowing when there is distraction. Like, again, talking to players or anyone, not even former players, just people. And when I hear people tell me they're going in 15 different directions, it's like, yeah, it sounds good. But the truth is you're afraid to focus.
Yeah.
Number of people texting in wanting to know the name of the book is called Everyone Can Be a Ninja by Akbar Baja Biamila. And you had mentioned at the beginning, you know, you grew up in Crenshaw.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing I knew, or when it first came on my radar, that area in South Central.
Boys in the Hood.
Boys in the Hood and, you know, Colors, movies like that mm-hmm. and so on. How is it that scary? Is this portrayed in some of the movies at that time when you were young?
You know what? I felt John Singleton, rest in peace.
Yeah.
I thought he did a great job in portraying the real struggle of my neighborhood in Boys in the Hood. And people ask me, you know, but when you're living in the neighborhood, you understand where the dangers are. You understand what streets you can go down, what color you can wear, what kind of, so you create your own safe haven within the craziness. But the truth is, it was accurate. I mean, those stories we know, you know, I grew up with those stories. I mean, for me to be in the seventh grade and lose a good friend of mine, which that was another obstacle. Like, I remember losing my good friend to a shooting. And at the time, that was my reality. As an older man now with kids, and I think back, oh my gosh,
yeah.
Who the heck would want to murder a seventh grader?
Because so
I have kids, and I'm like, a seventh grader?
Yeah. Yeah.
What could a seventh grader do to a person
right.
that you would want to murder them?
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't like this was an accident. I mean, this was a murder.
He was the target.
He was the target.
He was not an innocent bystander. Yeah. That's my daughter's in seventh grade. That blows
my mind.
My mind.
But now, just to like give you perspective, that was my reality, and it was just like, he wasn't the first person. Now, he's the first person that I knew intimately,
right. mm-hmm.
but he wasn't the first person that I heard of that. So yeah. although I was sad, it wasn't crazy to me.
Yeah. Right. And now with this context, it's a whole different thing. It was interesting with Boys in the Hood and just seeing also documentaries. It's weird to say, you know, mm-hmm. how removed we are. I saw a documentary about this place where you lived.
Right.
But, you know, it's California Sun. It's this
sure.
and the ranch homes. And it's smaller, but it seems, you know. It's like, wow, you know, how is this place ending up being so volatile? But you just explained it. If you knew how to play the neighborhood right,
right.
you could do
it.
Okay.
And it's not all bad. Like, you yeah. go outside and you're going to die.
A hail of bullets.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing. Watching Boys in the Hood, like, yes, there were parts of that movie that were just terrifying. I'm like, wow, I wouldn't want that to be a part of my life. But it also looked like they were enjoying themselves.
Yeah, you think about Larry Fishburne and the mentor that he was in the movie. I knew that for me, I talk mm-hmm. about, you know, in my book, Everyone Can Be a Ninja, Mr. Garrison was that mentor for me growing up. And I had so many other mentors along the way who tried to show me the rope, who showed me, you know, the good thing. My parents who were involved, introducing me to doctors and trying to get me around people who were influential and could lead me in the right direction and just show me and open me up to a whole new world. But those were some of the obstacles that I had to navigate, you know, growing up.
When you're in a neighborhood like that growing up, do you want to stay there and fix it, or do you want to get out, or both?
Both. Yeah, both. Because, you know, you cannot, And I truly believe this because I think one of the mantras in the neighborhood is that, oh, yeah, he's keeping it real because he's in the neighborhood. But you cannot grow standing still. You've got to move forward. And so many times I think the mindset is like you got to just stay right here because it, what it does, it just suffocates growth. You're not able to move forward if you're just stuck in one place. I've never seen a person stand still and be able to move forward. You just can't. And that's what it means when you're saying I got it. Now, for me, I have a lot of resources that goes back to my neighborhood because I want to be able to help move kids forward.
Right. Do you think – I'm sorry, Casey. Do you think the NFL – has in place enough mechanisms now? You talked about earlier about, you know, facing retirement at the age of 27, 28. Are there mechanisms in place to sort of prep these athletes that come in and have the world by the cojones and they're ready to go and they don't realize, you know, after football, they're not planning? Is there anything that helps finesse them along?
I don't even, and again, that, going back to rejecting your circumstance, I don't think it's an NFL thing. I think it's very easy to blame the NFL. Yeah, yeah. The NFL, like they definitely have a responsibility because these athletes, you know, we give our body, we give everything to the game.
Yeah.
And they have things in place. I went through broadcast boot camp for the NFL with the NFL where they get players who are interested in pursuing this plan, and they give you was essentially probably about a $30,000-$40,000, you know,
education
process. I went through the business school, Wharton School of Business, right out here.
Yeah.
For business management, again, I was trying to pursue different areas, and they have all these different things and certifications that you can take to help move players forward. For me, it comes down to the player making the decision to focus and really understand. But it's scary. It really is scary knowing that you got to jump into a whole nother lane. You've been going 100 miles an hour in this lane, and mm-hmm. you've been comfortable, and now you got to make a switch in lane. That can be scary.
Sure. And a lot of that's got to be on you, too, as well, even though because I'm sure that there are veterans saying, watch your money. This ain't going to last forever. Yeah. I'm sure the NFL has programs. The NBA does. I know that on how to manage yourself.
Yeah, but it's not even a watch your money type of thing as it is finding your purpose because you've been so focused, hyper-focused at a high level.
Right.
Most people cannot be that hyper-focused. And I think what makes us in awe of athletes is the fact that we are so hyper-focused on one thing, and we can do it well repetitively. Mm. We go back and get better and get better. Like, how can Odell Beckham get better? I mean, gosh, he's already good,
but
he's going to get better. And you see these with these athletes. Most people in their lives, they just stay even because they're – sometimes what I believe is a lot of people are afraid of success. But if I stay just right there in the middle and I'm just flowing along in the comfort zone, nobody ever has expectations of me, and I can just continue to consistently work through 20, 30 years of just staying right there. But if I stay hyper-focused and constantly looking to move the bar every time, that's a big deal.
That's
a big deal.
Yeah. Hey, so you're a world-class athlete, not much of a baseball player.
Was.
I'm sure you still are. How are you on roller skates?
Not very good.
Okay.
It takes me about 20 minutes to warm into it.
Uh-huh.
And then after a while, I start scooting. And from scooting, I start thinking I'm cool.
Yeah.
And then that's it.
Did you see this documentary on roller skating rinks in the area that you grew up in and how they're just disappearing?
I was a part of it. World on Wheels was the biggest one in our neighborhood. I think it was probably one of the biggest ones in the area. And you're right. It used to be a thing, but it also used to be an area where people used to get shot up a lot, too.
That'll hurt it.
People just stopped going.
But it was funny because in the documentary, they had talked about that and how on these, you know, these nights, people were like, all right, let's just put our differences aside and let's just skate.
Oh, no, it was a thing. It's a part of the vibe. It's a part of the dancing. It's a part of the culture of just moving. But I always wish I could skate like some of the people. And I used to – in fact, I still hate good skaters.
Preston's pretty good.
Huh?
I'm pretty good.
I can shuffle a
little
bit.
Can you really? Mm-hmm, yeah. And can you do the thing where you skate, and then you turn around and you do that little swivel back and you start skating backwards?
Yep.
I hate people who can do that. it makes me upset.
Do we have footage, Preston? In fact, one of the empty construction areas here, we had him skating around and got some footage.
Of course, there's like, you know, screws and bolts and things laying all over the place. Yeah. It was a little bit difficult, but I love doing that. I'm just curious, you know, right now we're getting a lot of texts coming in of people who are ready to take on the world today.
There you go.
After listening to Akbar speak about this, and they can pick up your book, which is available now, right?
Yeah, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, Everyone Can Be a Ninja. It's available wherever books are sold, or you can go to IamAkbar.com to purchase.
Is there an audio version of it?
I did the audio version. Can I be honest? Can I just keep it real? Because I feel like we're family in here.
Sure.
You know, I've heard audiobooks for a long time, and sometimes there are people who just give you like that lecture hall type
voice. Oh yeah, dude.
I couldn't do it. I couldn't let one of them those rando lecture hall readers do my book. And so I had to do it. But it was one of the hardest things I've ever had to do before because the pressure of reading and trying to make sure you're not boring.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, I must have taken 100 takes just to do one line, one paragraph.
How long did it take you to do the whole book?
Do you really want to know?
Yes.
5 days.
That's not that bad.
5 days. So I listen to a lot of books when I'm hiking. Like, I'll pop them in as I'm going along. And I hike every day, so I'm listening to a lot.
Yeah.
You're exactly right. I know some dudes, and when I hear them at the beginning of the thing, I'm like, oh, here we go. And then sometimes people read their own books, and they shouldn't.
Yeah, yes. Stephen King shouldn't. Yeah.
He's a brilliant writer. I would encourage people, just go ahead and hit me up on social media. I want to know. It was my very first time at it.
That's opening up a can of worms.
I'm going to go listen to it. You suck. Right. I don't want to be a ninja anymore. No, I mean, I was nervous. I was so nervous doing it, but I was like, I didn't want anyone else to tell my story. It just would feel weird for someone else to do from, you know what I mean?
No, it does, because you're passionate about it, and to have a third party relay what you're passionate about would seem lacking authenticity.
Right, because you could have the perfect inflection and the romantic voice when you're reading, and you know, but... It doesn't have the same effect if it's not coming through.
I was listening to one book. I listened to a lot of political stuff, and there was one of the guys, whenever he would be to somebody else, he'd be quoting, reading a quote, his voice would almost go up like, and then I don't want. And it's like, what is this?
You know what? I was, okay, this is funny that you say that, because when I would quote, so Allison Felix, you know, her story is featured in my book. My former teammate, Nnamdi Asamoah, who played for the Eagles.
Right.
His story is featured in, but when I was going through and reading Allison, some of the stuff that Allison and I were talking about, I was like, okay, how do I do Allison's voice? You know, because Allison says, well, they used to call me chicken legs. And so I was like, but they used to, and so I was trying to find that, because I didn't want to sound like this, because that's not how Allison sounds. So I was trying to find the balance in between my voice to figure out how to represent that it was Allison speaking and not
it's
me.
It's tough. Yeah.
It is.
A lot of people are asking how to spell your name because they're looking for the book, and that's a chore.
Is that really? That did not just come in, did it?
Yeah.
Oh boy. Okay, here we go. I hope you. Are people listening to this right now?
Yeah.
Okay, here we go. And I'm not doing the alphabet, so please don't send in. He just gave the alphabet.
Yeah.
It's GBAJABIAMILA. There are a lot of A's in there. That was my last name.
Here you go. Just type in American Ninja Warrior, and then go to IMDb, and you'll see the host. You'll see it's Akbar. You'll recognize name if you can't spell it all out right now, and you're in your car or something.
What are you trying to say? People can't remember how to spell my last name while driving? I mean, come on. The people here in Philadelphia are pretty small. I just told you I went to Wharton.
Yeah, I'll bet you there are times when you misspell your own name.
Yes. Yeah. No, you know when I misspell my last name? Is when people have a hard time on the other end listening to my name and say, okay, give me a spelling. And I go, G is in George, B is in boy. Hold on, where am I? A is in apple. Like, I got to keep up where I am.
Can you say Giannis's last name?
Oh my goodness! And we're from the same tribe. I gotta see it in front of me. Kumpo. Could somebody put it in front of me?
I struggle with it.
I can say it if I look at it.
Yeah.
We should have
it. And he only has two more letters in his last name than I do.
Okay. Here you go. Kathy's gonna take it.
Shame on me. And then we're from the same Yoruba tribe. I can see my dad say, "Well, I can't." Okay. Yeah. Antetokounmpo. There you go. Antetokounmpo. Yeah, I'm trying to do it with the Nigerian accent.
Antetokounmpo.
Tenkounmpo.
Tenkounmpo.
Are you Niger?
I am.
Okay. All right.
I just don't go out a lot.
Okay. Yeah.
It's very not nice. Easy.
No, it's not. No, it's not. It's not. But it's a Yoruba name. So as you can see, Baja Biamila is way easier.
Yeah. Much better.
By the way, we got to wrap things up, but real quick about American Ninja Warrior. What's the status of that?
May 29th. So that's in 13 days. We premiere season 11 of American Ninja Warrior.
It's amazing.
We're super excited about this. For the first time in season 11, we're doing something brand new. We're going to be pitting ninjas versus ninjas on the power tower. So the two fastest ninjas at the end of the episode will face off.
At the same time?
Wow. Yeah, at the same time. Wow. They're going to go head to head. Somebody might go blow for blow, too, but I didn't see anything.
Yeah.
But it's going to be a showdown. It's going to be pretty epic. So we can't wait for it. We start off in L.A. We kick it off with Los Angeles, and then we travel to six other cities.
Well, the book is called Everyone Can Be a Ninja. It is out now, and we appreciate you coming by, Akbar.
Thank you. Should I spell the last name one more time?
One more time. Go for it.
G-B-A-J-A-B-I-A-M-I-L-A.
And that's pronounced Baja Biamila. Ladies and gentlemen, Akbar Baja Biamila. Thanks, man.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Get the whole Preston and Steve Show or the Bizarre Files podcast at PrestonandSteve.com.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.